Good evening and welcome. As we continue our series, these glimpses of amazing, incredible tzaddikim, to introduce tonight's tzaddik, I'll share with you a few words written by a great tzaddik himself about this experience that we have when we read, when we learn, when we listen to these stories. Daka hi hargashasi kishani roe sipuri hakdoshim hatzadikim. My feelings are thin. Dak literally means thin or fine. Nivhal umishtomim ani. I am blown away, moved, shocked. Bush ani mipnei kdushasam. I am embarrassed before their holiness. And I tremble, severely tremble from my shortcomings. Whose diary entry is this? Rav Avram Yitzchak HaKohen Cook. Rav Cook says, when I read Sipurei Tzadikim, I'm tittering, you say in Yiddish. So, this is an important phrase. If Rav Kook, when he reads stories of tzaddikim, and he was from the highest of the high, if he's shaking, if he's quaking, so what does that mean for us? Uvacholzos, nonetheless, mischazik ani b'seichel tov. I strengthen myself with good insight. What do? Chozer ani b'tshuva. I improve myself. I come back a little bit in tshuva. L'chol ha'pachos, at least b'rayon, in my mind. I have an image of something that I wish I could have. Come a little. Okay, good. Good, good. You'll be mocking me if my head doesn't go that far back. Okay. V'shov ani l'limudai v'iyuni v'lamida sh'ani yochol l'sov l'sholo esbatal mitziru v'sagasi me'avodasi v'haskalasi sh'imagamas ha'shlim v'saru'i l'fanai. He says, I do tshuva, I think I want to be better, and then I come back to my purpose, my madrega. I thought this passage from Rav Kook is an important reminder. We spent the last few weeks, we talked about the Heilige Kloisterberger Rebbe, Zchus Yagon Aleinu, Zecher Tzadik Levracha. We talked about Rav Gustman, Zchus Yagon Aleinu, Zecher Tzadik Levracha. We're talking about people who, when you read these stories, when you hear these stories, you become overwhelmed, mischalchel, Rav Kook says. But even though they do make us shudder a little bit, they're still so important because they give us chizuk, they give us an opportunity to do a little bit of hirhurei tshuva, wishing that we could be a little better, and then we come back to our avoda with greater resolve. And that's, I think, a great way to introduce tonight's unbelievable light in a time of darkness. Rav Klona Miskalman Shapira, Shemi Kamdam, Moskuser Galenu, the Pious Tzetzner Rebbe. The Rebbe quoted from his father. His father was Rav Elimelech of Grozitsk. Rav Elimelech passed away when little Rav Klona Misk was 3 years old. He was raised primarily by his mother. He was married at a young age to a great Rav Moshe Habstein, a descendant from the Kozhen Tzar Magid, but he had many traditions from his father, and apparently, even though he had lost his father at the age of 3, there were certain memories that he had of his father. He recited Kaddish for his father at the age of 3. So the Pious Tzetzner quotes from his father, Shehamoser nafsho ba'ad Yisrael, someone who sacrifices themselves for the Jewish people, Godol who? Min hamoser nafsho ba'ad Hashem levad. That person is greater than someone who's moser nefesh for Hashem himself. Wow. Why? V'harei zeh k'mi shemoser nafsho ba'ad ben hamelech. That what? Shekol kach gedola ahavaso lemelech, that the person is so devoted to the king that not only would this subject sacrifice himself for the king, even not just for the king, but for the king's son. Shelo b'lvad shebishvilo moser nafsho, ragam b'shvil b'no moser nafsho, also for his son. We could talk about so many different aspects of the Pius Setzner, his teachings in Hasidus, his learning, his leadership, tons and tons of things. But what I wanted to share tonight is this perspective on the Pius Setzner. For some of us, we've talked about the Pius Setzner over the past couple of years many, many times. We spent a whole year, one of our groups, learning his diary. As part of our studying and teaching at the Holocaust Museum, we talk a lot about the Pius Setzner. But tonight, I just wanted to focus on this dimension, which, as Rav Kook said, even though it's so beyond us, can help us be chozer b'tshuva in the way that we see other Jews. Because the Rebbe was a person who embodied this Torah, who was moser nafsho ba'ad Yisrael. He was moser nafsho for other Jews. You know, one of the unique things about the Rebbe was that he was well-versed in medicine. And before the war, he was in touch with different doctors and pharmacists, and he used to write prescriptions. So people would come to him for prescriptions, but they didn't just come for the medicinal component, because they came for someone who mamish cared. So there's a maisa, there was one simple chassid who once came to the Rebbe, and he said to him, Rebbe, I need you to please, please write me a new prescription. Because the old prescription, it faded. It faded, and now my headaches are back. You know, last time, Rebbe, you wrote me a prescription for these very bad headaches, but now the prescription is faded, and now the headaches are back. So the chassidim are standing around that kind of looking quizzically. The Rebbe says, I totally hear you. I understand. I'm right here with you. So he takes out his pen. He writes out the prescription. He folds it up in half, and he gives it to the man. And he walks out. The chassidim say to the Rebbe, what's going on? What do you mean the prescription faded? So the Rebbe said, he said, you know, this chassid, he has so much emunas chachamim, and we're so connected, and he so believes that the Ribbono Shel Olam is taking care of him, that he actually doesn't take the prescription to the pharmacist. I don't know if you noticed, when he walked out, he takes the prescription, he tucked it in his hat. And that's what he means, that he believes that because the prescription is worn out in his hat, it's not effective. So you have to write a new prescription that he should keep it in his hat to keep his headaches away. The kachav, and come back 2 days later, says Rebbe, God bless you. Thank you so much. My headaches are gone. He's got the prescription in the hat. There was a maisa that there was a group of women who were very distraught over something, and they came, and they were so distraught that they burst into the Rebbe's office. So one of the gabbaim started to get angry and tried to throw them out. And the Pius Setzner stopped them and he said, don't you understand? They're obviously so broken. They need so badly to be strengthened. You can't just throw them out. You have to bring them in. The Rebbe was an unbelievable master at understanding people and connecting to them and building an emotional bridge. And this was true not just for adults, but even, and most importantly, with young people. The Rebbe is born in 1888 to this great Hasidic dynasty, Rebbe Elimelech of Grozhetsk. After already just a few years, he gets married, he settles in Piasetsno, which is a suburb of Warsaw, he becomes the Rav, and people flocked him. And not only adults, but he starts a yeshiva called Das Moshe, which was the name of his father-in-law, Rav Moshe Hapstein, the Kozhentser descendant. And he has hundreds and hundreds of students. And he is able to relate to people in a way with the kind of care and attention that becomes magnetic. People come to him from all over. He's able to relate to students and inspire them and raise them up. And so in the late 1920s, he writes a book. I left it at home. The book is called Chovas HaTalmidim. There are actually two different English translations of this book. It is, I would say, in the world of educational philosophy, about three generations ahead of its time. It innovates what we would call today child-centered education, understanding each person, caring about the person, the individual. First of all, being open about the fact that there is an off-the-derech crisis in Poland in the 1920s. I don't know how many people wanted to talk about that. But it was the Rebbe's unbelievable sense of people, of understanding kids and where they're up to and what they need, and how he was able to provide that, which is what made him a magnet for people coming from all over. And he really understood that. So there was a guy who was once going to a certain town, and he went to the Rebbe for a bracha to say goodbye that he was going to this town. So the Rebbe asked him, "Can you do me a favor? Can you buy me a pipe?" Because in that town they had a particular shop where they sold pipes. A pipe for tobacco. "Could you please buy me?" It's the guy, like, you know, it felt like $1 million that he's going to buy the Holy Pius Setzner a pipe. So he leaves. And someone who was standing there says, "But Rebbe, you have a pipe, and I think you have a backup pipe, and maybe like a Gabbai Sheni pipe." The Rebbe says, "Yeah, but you understand, this man, why did he come talk to me, to tell me that he's going to that city? Because he wants to feel connected. So if I give him a little something to do, if I give him a little mission, he's going to feel so good about that." The understanding of people, the care, the thoughtfulness. Apparently, Pius Setzner had a saying that a Rebbe who's not willing to go to Gehenna to save his chassid is not really a Rebbe. That was the story of his life. At the end of his life, and then we're going to go back to the beginning, he found himself in a labor camp not far from Lublin called Tronicki. And this was in the fall of 1943. And people knew that the Pius Setzner was in this place, and they sent word that they were going to get him smuggled out. And you know what happened? He refused. The same thing, he was also offered, if you go back at the beginning of the war, Chassidim contacted him from different places, that he could escape from Poland. And he refused. He said, I'm not going to leave my community, my Jews, my family. So at the end of the war, he's in Tronicki. At this point, he has no one, as we're going to explain shortly. But he makes a pact. There was a handful of Jews there, some of whom were religious Jews and some of whom were not religious Jews. But they were all prominent people in their fields, artists and thinkers and philosophers and communal leaders. And they were in Tronicki together, and they made a pact that no one would leave without the other one. And that's why on Dal Cheshvan, in November of 1943, when the Germans, they did away with this camp, the Rebbe's neshama went back to Shemayim, because he wasn't going to go without the other Jews. Because it's exactly what he learned from his father, that the greatest thing is to be moser nefesh for another Jew. And if his remaining in Tronicki was necessary to be mechazik the other people, so that was his choice. That's what he chose. So let's take a step back and realize, not just in his death was he moser nefesh for other Jews, this was his whole chiyus, especially when the war broke out. In 1939, the Rebbe found himself in Warsaw. He had one son, whose name was Elimelech, was named for his father. He was extremely beloved. He had a daughter-in-law, they had a couple of other family members. The Germans began the bombing of Warsaw with, as you know, an aerial assault, a blitzkrieg. And at the beginning of the war broke out at the beginning of September, so the Rebbe's son, Rebbe Elimelech, was injured in the bombing of Warsaw. He was taken to a local hospital. The Rebbe goes to visit him in the hospital and leaves, but when the Rebbe leaves, his daughter-in-law and a few other of the family members are there at the hospital visiting. Meanwhile, a bomb falls on the hospital, and it kills his daughter-in-law and several other family members, but his son is still alive. But his son passes away on the second day of Sukkot. Second day of Sukkot, he's gone. And basically now, within just a few weeks, the Rebbe's entire personal world is destroyed. He feels that his world is destroyed. So what does a person do in 1939 in Warsaw? This is before the Germans even walk in the door. This is before, they don't set up a ghetto until 1940. they're going to have to live in a certain area. And the Rebbe actually did not have to move because his house was located in the area that was kind of the Jewish quarter, and later became, in the fall of 1940, became the Jewish ghetto. What does a person do? They can move inward. They can think about themselves. Or they can think, what can I do for another Jew? And that's what the Rebbe became. The Rebbe became not just a person of personal piety, of great personal tzidkus, of learning, of teaching, but of giving chizuk to other people. There's a lot written about this. If you are familiar with the Rebbetzin Esther Farbstein, she is a Holocaust expert, so she wrote a book which was originally in Hebrew, translated into English, called Beseser Ram, Hidden in Thunder. She has a whole section of many different pieces on the Pius Etzner on what he did for people. And the fact that not only did he manage to keep his sense of self together after being his whole world being destroyed, but to be able to give chizuk to other people. I read an account of a survivor who described davening in the minyan of the Pius Etzner. He says that everybody who davened there, just being b'mechitzoso, they felt uplifted by him. He would have shalashudas tishin. I read an account of a survivor who describes being with the Rebbe for Shavuos and how he spent his entire existence in the ghetto trying to raise other people up. This was his life. This was what he was about. In addition to his personal piety, before the war, the Rebbe was an unbelievable darshan. This sefer, I'll share with you just some svarim to just be familiar with. This sefer is called Derech HaMelech. These are the drashos, the chassidische homilies that the Rebbe gave in Shabbosos and Yomim Tovim before the war. In addition, the Rebbe had a small secret society of spiritual seekers. For them, he put together this small companion called B'nai Machshava Tova. It was a group, like a secret cadre of people who got together regularly to talk about aspiring in Avodas Hashem. Originally, this book, B'nai Machshava Tova, the Rebbe had requested that it never be published. But after the war, it leaked out, so there was a question, they decided to publish it. But the Rebbe was, on this personal level, his own godless was unbelievable. If you want to know more about a firsthand work, a look at what was going on in the Warsaw Ghetto from a religious standpoint, there was one member of the Onik Shabbos archives, which we're going to talk about in a couple minutes. His name was Rav Shimon Uberband. Zecher Tzadik Levracha, Hashem Yikom Dam L'Zchus Yigalein. Rav Shimon Uberband worked with Emanuel Ringelblum, and his job was chronicling religious life in the ghetto. So he tells a maisa in here. This was written at the time, not afterwards. He was deported in 1942. But before then, he describes here Erev Yom Kippur, before dawn, going with the Pius Etzner to the mikveh. They had hired a guy to take them across the neighborhood, and the guy never showed. So they had to walk, and they knew that if they were caught by the Gestapo, they would be shot dead, to this closed mikveh where the Rebbe had arranged that they would open it for him on Erev Yom Kippur. So you're talking about somebody who their own personal spiritual level is just stratospheric. But where was his focus? On the other Jews, on everybody else, on what they needed, on how he could help other people. So he was very involved in all kinds of communal efforts. It's amazing. One piece of Torah, which is appropriate because it's this week's learning, comes from a drasha that the Rebbe gave in 1941 in Parshas Chukas in the ghetto. Now we owe this drasha, this ksav, to an extraordinary set of circumstances that the Ribono Shel Olam enabled. There was a Mizrahi gentleman, a major communal leader in the 1950s, named Baruch Duv Devani. He got a phone call or a telegram or whatever they got, he didn't get an email. He didn't get a WhatsApp or a, what do they call it, a tweet. He got a message in the 1950s that a Polish factory worker digging in the ghetto unearthed these. You see what that is? Nope. What's that? That's right. rusty milk cans. And inside the milk cans were documents. Documents from the Oneg Shabbos archives that was led by this man, the scholar Emanuel Ringelblum. In this milk can of documents was a collection of documents by the Piasetzner Rebbe. Now, it's not certain, but this is what it seems is the detective work. We mentioned before that Rav Shimon Huberband was a friend and connected with the Piasetzner. He was also working with the Oneg Shabbos archives. What likely happened, you ready for this, is that in the winter, in January of 1943, when things were looking very, very grim, the Rebbe gave a trove of documents to Rav Shimon Huberband. Rav Shimon Huberband, in turn, buried these documents with the Oneg Shabbos archives. And that's why these unbelievable contemporaneously written documents of the Rebbe survived Ad Hayom Hazeh. Happens to be, by the way, I was just talking to somebody recently who told me that there's still some discussions, I don't know anything about the details, there's some discussions about trying to figure out how to excavate because there's still, I think, about 30% of the Oneg Shabbos archives that was not discovered. So there's still some question where under the ghetto these other milk cans, these other metal cans of documents are today. Someone told me they heard a rumor it's under the Chinese embassy in Warsaw. I don't know what that means. I don't know if there is a Chinese embassy. But the Rebbe had a collection of documents. What were these documents? So part of the documents was from this volume. The Rebbe had a diary. It's called Tzav Zeruz, which is an amazing spiritual journey. It's kedai to learn the Tzav Zeruz. He also has two sections called Movo She'ar Menach Sharas Avreichem, which is kind of like the follow-up to the Chovas HaTalmidim, like for advanced, super spiritual people. And he had drashos. He had sermons. Sermons that he gave to give people chizuk in the Warsaw Ghetto. What's interesting about these sermons is that he never once uses the word Germanim. Never speaks about Germans. Never speaks about Nazis. But he does speak a lot to the heart of the people. He talks a lot. These are very intense drushes. He talks a lot about suffering, different approaches to suffering. If you want an analysis of these drushes, you should find Dr. Nechemia Polin, who wrote a book called The Holy Fire, which is the authoritative work on analyzing the Rebbe's development of his thought, which is not our topic tonight, from the beginning of the war, where he emphasized highly Skarva Onesh, toward the end of the war, where he doesn't emphasize that at all. Totally different thing. The Rebbe buried these drushes with a cover letter, which you see in front of you. This cover letter, it's on my, you don't have it in front of you, I'm holding it up. I'll explain to you what you have in your hand in a minute. This cover letter says, please, essentially, if there are any rabbis left in Poland, publish this. Publish these drushes from the years of wrath. And if there's no rabbis left in Poland, because they knew how bad it was. You should know, I have a brother, Harav Yeshaya Shapira, Tel Aviv, Palestina. His brother was known as the Admor Hechalutz, the pioneering Hasidic master. Rav Yeshaya Shapira made Aliyah years before. He says, please send it to my brother. It should be for a blessing, you know? Someone should publish this. So they sent these ksavim through Baruch Dov Devani to Tel Aviv, to Rav Yeshaya Shapira, who published them under the title Eish Kodesh, the Holy Fire. And that's how it became known as the Eish Kodesh, the Piasetzner, as the Eish Kodesh. Here's the postscript, which I gave you in your own hand. You ready for this? So there's a guy who works in Yad Vashem, and Israel is a very prominent scholar. His name is Danny Reiser. Danny Reiser went back to the archival material, and he created a critical edition of the Rebbe's drashos. So, Baruch Hashem, I had the great schus. I was in Israel, so I was able to get a hold of this. It's not so easy, but you can find it now online. What Danny Reiser did was a two-volume set. The first volume is, or here, I'll hold it up. This is the first volume. This is what you read if you want to read the drashos of the Rebbe. The Rebbe, again, did not call it Eish Kodesh, so that's why it's called Drashos Mishnos Hazam, Sermons from the Years of Wrath. But he gave us a gift, Danny Reiser, such a beautiful thing. Could you imagine? What he did was, in this second volume, you see on the page, he actually Xeroxed the Rebbe's handwriting and showed on the left hand how the Rebbe edited it, because you could tell that the Rebbe, I don't know where he got all this paper from, which is a good question, went back, the Rebbe went back and did crossouts and notes. We even know from a drasha that he edited late in December, Hanukkah 1942, that he added an editorial note. So before he gave this away, probably to Rav Shimer Yubaban, he looked it over and made tikkunim. What you have in front of you on your paper, what you are holding tonight, is a copy of the Piasetzner's handwritten drasha. It was worth coming tonight just to look at this. You see this? This is the Rebbe's handwriting. You see how small it had to be. And so Danny Reiser went painstakingly through and did this edition, which is hard for you to see because your copy is black and white. But he took a red ink and he shows where the Rebbe made the edits the second time around, and what he fixed and what he deleted. And if you notice, this drasha that we have, he has a patch on it. If you look on your pages, on the bottom right, you see the Rebbe even put a patch to change that section of the drasha. You're mamish holding on to the Ksav Yad Kodesho of the Piasetzner Rebbe that he wrote in 1941, in the ghetto. How many years ago was that? We're in 2022. So that's 81 years ago. This is his actual handwriting. So what did he tell the Jews that week? What did he tell them this parsha? So skip to the next page because it's very hard to read the Rebbe's handwriting. But go a couple pages in. I gave you the whole thing in the regular text. It's Parshas Chukas. So the Rebbe is giving us the date, which, by the way, sometimes he gives you the date. And what's an interesting exercise to do, and there's a professor, Henry Abramson, who basically did this in a volume that I went to my library downstairs. I could not find it. I think I lent this book to somebody, and I don't know that I ever saw it since then. But Henry Abramson did something interesting, which you can do on your own. You have a copy of the Ringelblum Diaries, the Warsaw Ghetto Diaries. You put that next to the Rebbe's drasha. You could tell, Yud Tammuz, you go to hebcal.com, you punch it in, what date was that in July? And then you go to the entry in Ringelblum and you find out what's happening in the ghetto at that time. You really get a sense of how he's speaking to the people. So the beginning of this drasha you see is in Parshas Chukas Yud Tammuz. He's talking about Avodas Hashem Al Tiyuka Avodim Amisham Shenesarav Amanas L'Kabal Pras. He's talking about the importance, this is on page 196, on the importance of, is it cut off in yours? Do you have the bottom? Do you see where I am? Parshas Chukas Yud? Right, the page starts? Good. Okay. So now, he says, what's the goal of a Jew? Is that we shouldn't just be focused on Avodas Hashem for ourselves, or even to get Olam Haba. We should be focused on something greater. Something greater, and even if we can't do this all the time, we should do it a little bit at a time. So now the Rebbe speaks to the heart of the people. Look on the left-hand column. The paragraph starts, Lachain. Lachain. Kisha eis tzara liyakov, when it's a difficult time for Jews, sha'al yedei zeh ha'avonos miskaprim, that through the suffering, people get an atonement. Mikol makom, nonetheless, da'aka. Here's the problem. Masha ish misragel yoser lahargish es atzmo. The fact that the person is suffering, so they become more self-absorbed. You think about yourself more when you're hurting. He says, when a person is suffering, they think to themselves, this is hurting me. This is something I'm missing out on. I. Remember, the Rebbe is living this himself. He has no son. He has no daughter. He has no family. He has no chassidus. A person could fall into that. Ki ha'im efshar shiyaku lo ha'ish v'lo yargish ke'ev begufo. Of course, it's normal that a person should feel. A person is hurting. They're going to feel hurting. The Rebbe is talking, of course, about himself. Of course he's hurting. Va'al yedei shebechol hayom. Every day, all day, yish lo lidogol chayov. That person has to be worried about their life. That maybe they're going to be taken to the Umschlagplatz. They're going to be sent away, deported.
Tahatuluim lo mineged val keva v'yisur v'akashim nishka shuv. The person sinks bar goshas atzmo in feeling, thinking about themselves.
Va'avodasu hi avoda b'matzav namoch shuv b'shvilo.
Yeah, and it's all about the person themselves. Turn to the next page. Top of the next page.
What do we need to do? Of course, the Rebbe is telling the people, look, we're all suffering. We're all hurting. We're all scared. What's the avoda right now?
Vihine, kedei la'orer,
you see the paragraph top right?
Kedei la'orer b'marim rachamim al Yisrael,
to bring rachmanis unto the Jewish people, l'hamtik esadinim, to sweeten the judgments.
Tzrichim la'orer b'kirbenu rachmanis al Yisrael zulaso.
You know what we need to do? We need to have rachmanis on another person. We need to think about another Jew.
Lo levad shetzrichim litin kol ma sheyicholim litin lahem, to help by giving to others whatever we can give to them.
The Rebbe's apartment was open. People came. They took his time. Instead of sitting bezbodurus and learning by himself, he was an open door so that people could come and get chizuk. That's what he did. He gave of himself.
But not just to give rak harachmanos ba'atzma,
that a person should nurture compassion. Shema orin b'kirbein al Yisrael po'olas barom. It helps. It affects in the heavens.
Tzrichim shalole yisragel b'tzaros Yisrael. We shouldn't become accustomed to suffering.
Kloma riboy hatzaros lo yitashishu b'kirbeinu v'lo yichves harachmanos al Yisrael. The Rebbe is saying, look, we go out there in the street and we see people, lo aleinu, he doesn't say it obviously outright. You see people dying of hunger in the streets. You see so much suffering. So what could happen? The Rebbe says a person could become callous and not feel the pain of another. He says the avoda is that within all of this suffering, within all of these bitter tzaros, is to try, can we feel for somebody else? Can we feel a little rachmanus for another person? Can we be ma'or the rachmanos for somebody else? And then he goes on to quote more ma'amor in Chazal. Why is it b'schus nashim rachmanios that we were nigalum in Mitzrayim? Because nashim are rachmanios. When there was a crisis, Yoshiahu sent to Chulda to the women. Why? Because nashim rachmanios. Because rechem and rachamim is what we need. Amazing. You can read the rest of drasha on your own. But when the Rebbe gave this drasha, he was really telling over his life's mission. This is what he heard from his father, and this is what he was living. Do you know that his apartment, the number, his address was Dezelna number 5. Became a soup kitchen at one point, feeding people. So it was a place where people went for chizuk in emotion, for psychological help, but they also went for basic sustenance. Basic sustenance. Because this was what the Rebbe was all about. You know, probably there are so many teachings from the Rebbe. This is a beautiful sefer that I'm sharing with you. It's called Warmed by the Fire of the Eish Kodesh. My Rebbe Rav Moshe Weinberger, he established the Shul Eish Kodesh in Woodmere. So he has a Hilula every year. So one of the Talmidim, Rebbe Yamin Wolf, wrote down a bunch of the talks that Rav Weinberger gave on the Hilula of the Eish Kodesh. So many of the themes are about strengthening and raising up and helping other Jews. Probably the most famous, and we'll close with this, the most famous Maisa that relates to the Piasetz and that probably became famous because of Shlomo Karlach is the story of the Holy Hunchback. Some of you know it. If you know it, it's kedai to learn it the second or third time. And if you don't know the story, it's kedai. Maybe it's kedai that I came to Chicago just to share this Holy Hunchback story. It's a mamish, very, very important story. So Shlomo Karlbach, he was very makushar to people from the world before, from his own family, from others, from great tzaddikim. And he was always kind of on the lookout for these nuggets, these stories, for ways to connect to tzaddikim from the previous generation. So it happens to be that he was in Tel Aviv, walking along the promenade on the Yarkon one afternoon. Came to Israel for a concert. This was in the late 60s. And as he's walking, he sees there was a guy up ahead of him wearing a blue jumpsuit from the Iriya. You know how like the municipal workers, they wear a particular garb? So the guy's sweeping the boardwalk. And as Reb Shlomo gets closer, he sees that the man is a very, very large man. And he's kind of like, you can see from the back, he's kind of like a little bit disfigured. And he gets close to him, and he sees that his mom is a hunchback. And he reaches over and taps him on the shoulder. Reb Shlomo says to the man, Shalom. Shalom Aleichem. With his best Israeli accent. And this hunchback turns and looks at him. And Nebuch, his face is very grotesque. It's very disfigured. And he whispers to him, Aleichem Shulam. So Shlomo immediately detects this very strong Eastern European accent. So he says to him, Kvodo, Meifo ata? Where are you from? Because he wants to find out. It's the man, street, just sweeping. He says, Animi, Kfar Katan Bepolin, a small village. A kleine shtetl in Poland. Where? Shlomo says to him, he says, Piasetzna. Piasetzna! Shlomo says to him, did you know the holy Eish Kodesh, the holy Reb Chlonim is Kalman? The guy's sweeping. He says, yeah, yeah. He says, yes! What do you mean, yes? How did you know him? He says, you know, I was a bacher in the yeshiva, in Das Moshe, in the Piasetzna's yeshiva. So Shlomo says, unbelievable. Can you tell me, like, maybe you have an hour to spare, you can tell me over all the Torah that you learned. And the hunchback leans in and he looks at him. He says, do you see me? Do you see what I look like? He says, I was 15 years old when they took me and they sent me to that place. But I was huge, so they thought I was 18. So I had to carry enormous boulders and I took terrible beatings. So do you think I can remember anything from before? I mean, look at me. So Shlomo says to him, please, please, I'm begging you. Just one thing. Can you remember anything? It's the street sweeper, he says to him, the hunchback says to him, he says, okay, there's one thing. On Friday nights, the Rebbe used to get all the boys together on Shabbos, and he used to tell us, Kinderlach, children, the greatest zach in the welt, the greatest thing in the world, is to do someone a favor. The greatest thing in the world is to do someone a favor. That's what he used to tell us all the time. So I'll tell you, when I was in that place in Auschwitz, and I was there for a long time, at a certain point when I realized I had no brothers or sisters or parents or friends, and I was so badly beaten and disfigured, I couldn't live with myself, I decided I was going to go to the fence, and I was going to throw myself on the fence, and you know what would happen? The fence was electrified. So as he's walking to the fence, the hunchback says, all of a sudden, I heard the Rebbe's voice in my mind's ear. He was saying, the greatest thing in the world is do someone a favor. And I stopped and I thought, yeah, okay. I went back to my barracks, and in the corner, sitting on the floor, was a broken man. And I sat down next to him, and I said to him, Rabbi, what's your name? Tell me your story. And for an hour, he poured out his heart and told me his whole life story, his children, his parents, where he's from. And I lived another day. So I survived that hell, and I came to Israel. But unfortunately, look at me. Who's going to pay attention to me? Like, and I became a street sweeper, so I have a few pennies. But at some point, I just couldn't take it anymore. And I never learned how to swim, and I decided I'm just going to go out into the yam, and then I can't take it. I can't take it anymore. So the hunchback says, I was walking, wading into the Mediterranean, and no one was looking. And as I was going further and further, the water is going higher and higher past my knees and my waist up to my chest. But then I heard the Rebbe's voice. The greatest thing in the world is to do someone a favor. So I realized, you know, Taka, okay. So I got out of the water and I went to the old bus station. Back behind the old bus station, Nebuch, there were some cardboard boxes and broken Jews. And I found one guy sitting next to a cardboard box. I sat down next to him and said, Reb Yid, what's your story? Tell me your story. And he did. At this point, Reb Shlomo was standing and he's mishtomim.
standing in the middle of the promenade, the boardwalk in Tel Aviv, and he embraces the hunchback, the holy hunchback. He gives him the biggest hug, and he says, Rabbi Yid, Mamish, you made my day, you made my whole life. It's Mamish, the teaching of the Pia Setzner. The greatest thing in the world is to do someone a favor. He says, I'm so sorry, I gotta run, I'm going back to America, but the next time I come back for a concert, I'm gonna come, I gotta see you, I gotta visit you, thank you so much. He gives him a big hug and he runs off this concert. 3 months later, Reb Shlomo's back in Israel, so he goes right back to Tel Aviv, first stop, gets off Ben Gurion, runs the promenade. So he's looking around, where's the holy hunchback? Can't find him. Finally, in the distance, he sees a guy wearing a blue jumpsuit, he starts running over, but he could tell already from the distance that's not the right look. The man is very thin, and he gets closer and he sees, no, it's not him. So he says, Adoni, Atamakir, do you recognize, maybe, do you know, there was a hunchback he used to, he says, yeah, I think he died about a month ago. Did you know him? He says, no, I never talked to him. Shlomo says, oh, you missed out. And there's so many things, when I was sitting down to think about tonight, to talk about the Pia Setzner. And as Rav Kook says, he's so far beyond anything we cannot grasp. It like makes you a little bit scared to talk about such a person. And from all the incredible educational teachings and how he was able to inspire young people and the depth of his profound, incredible Hasidic insights and his avodas, his personal avodas Hashem, which is evident in the Tzav Aziris about when they had Achnasa Sefer Torah, how he did spontaneous cartwheels as an expression of his love for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Like, that's the level that he was on. But I thought that maybe for us, on our level, this aspect of the Rebbe's life is maybe the most impactful. The fact that the Rebbe learned from his father and taught his Talmidim and lived by this example, that the Ikar is to have Rachmanis on other Jews, to think about other Jews, to care about other Jews, to help somebody else. That's the greatest avoda, that's the greatest Mesiris Nefesh. More than Mesiris Nefesh, he said from his father, for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is the Mesiris Nefesh for another Jew. And that's how he lived. And what's amazing is that even though his neshama went back to the Ribono Shel Olam in the fall of 1943, now, in 2022, the light of the Pia Setzner burns as bright, if not even brighter than then. Because now people are learning his Torah all over the world. And people are being inspired by his light. And the light that we're sharing tonight is this light of the Rachmanis on another person, of caring for another Jew. And that is something that each one of us can do in the merit of this great tzaddik, Rav Kolman Miskalman Shapira. Shem Yikom Delmo.